Hi, everyone. I'm so excited to announce that on November 2nd and 3rd, the Nonprofit Social Media Summit is coming back. It's all virtual this year and free. The purpose of the summit is to help nonprofits of all sizes build actionable social media marketing and fundraising plans without overwhelm or tech fatigue. And the best part is that many of my Nonprofit Nation guests are speakers, including Suhaila Wahid, Rhea Wong, Kat Murphy from Giving Tuesday, and more. If you want to register, go to jcsocialmarketing.com/summit and get your ticket, jcsocialmarketing.com/summit, and join in the fun. Thanks for listening. Hello, and welcome to Nonprofit Nation. I'm your host, Julia Campbell, and I'm going to sit down with nonprofit industry experts, fundraisers, marketers, and everyone in between to get real and discuss what it takes to build that movement that you've been dreaming of. I created the Nonprofit Nation podcast to share practical wisdom and strategies to help you confidently find your voice, definitively grow your audience, and effectively build your movement. If you're a nonprofit newbie or an experienced professional who's looking to get more visibility, reach more people, and create even more impact, then you're in the right place. Let's get started. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Nonprofit Nation. I'm your host, Julia Campbell, and I'm here with one of my absolute favorite people to see online, to speak with, to hang out with. It's Lynn Wester, the donor relations guru. She's an expert in curating donor experiences that make donors happy to stay on as loyal supporters, and her guidance has led organizations to be recognized on the national stage for fundraising innovation, creative communication, and groundbreaking donor relations work. So happy to have you here, Lynn.
Excited to be here, Julia. Thanks for having me.
Yay. And we were trying to figure out when we met. It might have been CosCamp, it might have been online, but I was really fortunate to have spoken at your donor relations conference. Was that 2019?
Yes, that was two years ago. Yeah, because the pandemic feels like it's lasted 8 years. So
it does. Yeah. That was such a fabulous event. And thank you so much for having me there. So I'm just really thrilled to have Lynn here today. She's going to tell us about her work and then we're going to get into it. So why don't you tell us what you do, the clients that you work with, and the kind of impact that you're making?
Sure. So we at the Donor Relations Guru Group focus on donor relations, communications, and events. So kind of the infrastructure behind the donor experience. We don't necessarily ask for money, but money comes. And our goal is to keep donors happy. Donor retention is really what we live for. We work with organizations large and small, from best buddies to major universities, healthcare organizations. We also provide tons of free resources on our website. So we have samples of every type of fundraising communication you can imagine at donorrelationsguru.com. And we also host Facebook Lives, webinars. We are here as a source for those who are looking to better their fundraising and donor relations. And I like to say sometimes we spread the gospel of gratitude. And so we want everyone to understand how important thanking and reporting their donors' impact is to their organization.
So one quick question is, how are donor relations different than fundraising and how do they fit together?
Yeah. So I know a lot of fundraisers say donor relations is what happens after the gift. I like to say that fundraising is a part of donor relations, actually, in that effective fundraising is building relationships with people. And so we really specialize in the areas of gratitude, impact, recognition, and engagement. So mainly post-gift, but also leading up to the next gift, two sides of the same coin. And one of the things that we've learned is that in order to keep your donors giving, you have to keep them happy. And so we work very hard to keep donors happy, to keep them engaged with the major changes they've made in your organization and to have them feel really good and positive about those changes.
What are some of the biggest changes or shifts that you have seen
in the sector in terms of donor relations or just in terms of really anything since the pandemic started?
Yeah. So, you know, I hate to say that the pandemic's been a good thing, but for donor relations and fundraising, it has. We've seen organizations focus on what really matters to donors, focus on the basics, the fundamentals of thanking donors, telling them what their money did, avoiding the pomp and circumstance sometimes of events that aren't really meaningful to a lot of donors, and really focusing on direct relationship building. When all the gimmicks and the flash are gone, at the end of the day, it's a relationship between an organization and a human being.
Absolutely. So you're seeing events. Do you think events are going to come back or just be a different type of animal?
I'm guiding my clients differently around events than I used to, in terms of, I think that events will come back. Of course, human beings are social creatures by nature. I'm guiding my clients to do much smaller, more intimate, bespoke events of 10 to 25 people, maybe 50 people maximum, as opposed to the 300 person cattle call that used to be.
Yes, the cattle call.
The standing at the bar, the picked over cheese tray.
Oh, no, gosh.
Nobody doesn't want to have their hands on food anymore.
No.
Right? So we also have to think differently about how we serve people. We have to think differently about, our spaces are going to have to be larger for fewer people, because now we have this kind of 6-foot bubble around us. It doesn't matter if you're vaccinated or not. You still want your bubble. You still want your space. I don't think I'll be ever eating at a buffet again, or, you know, like those
things. I'm so sad about buffets.
I know. But now I realize how few people wash their hands. Like,
then you realize really how gross all of us
are. We are. Yeah. And I'm like, why did we have such a problem with hand washing? Like, why was that the thing, you know, so I think donors want experiences tailored to them. So instead of events, I want us to create experiences. I take that from my time at Disney, where we create guest experiences, right? Yes. We don't have events or have parties at Disney. You believe that your trip there is a lifetime experience with us. And so I want nonprofits to think about that. I also want nonprofits to think about what really matters to the donor. Do they need that coaster, that mug, that t-shirt? Do they need to be placed in a giving society? Do you need to list their names? You know, as we look at our fundraising world through a diversity, equity, and inclusion lens, I am encouraging people to drop their giving societies, because basically it's a rich people worship group. You know, like, oh, you've given us $1 million. You're a better person than someone who's given us $50, and we'll name you the Gold Leaf Laureates. And we're not going to do that for people who've given us $50 for 40 years. So how does that encourage inclusion in our donor base? And how does that encourage a younger donor who says, that's not aspirational anymore? It's not aspirational to take a bunch of wealth and to be lauded for it just because you have capacity. I want to laud people who make sacrificial gifts and people who are loyal to our organization. So the other thing that the pandemic, you know, we faced a dual, if not a triple pandemic in looking at race, equity, and inclusion here in the United States. Yep. And I am bound and determined to make fundraising a more inclusive profession, a more inclusive opportunity for donors who say, what will my $100 do when all I see is you standing next to $1 million checks and, you know, rich, pale people? And so I don't want to be a part of creating elitism. I want to be a part of reinforcing that every donor is a generous soul and that there's only 60% of us that are generous. So why are we valuing someone that gives us $1,000 more than we value someone that gives us $50? So that is a change and a shift I am pushing hard.
I love that. I want to democratize philanthropy as well. And that's why, when I'm teaching and talking about social media and online giving and text to give and things like that, email giving, I see it as a form of, it's not a shiny new tool, it's not a shiny object, it's really the democratization of philanthropy. If I can give $5 to my friend's birthday fundraiser, I may be more inclined to research the nonprofits around me or to volunteer or to give $10 to a different organization. So I think we have it all backwards in the way that we're doing it. But I love that. So when I last saw you speak, you talked a lot about loving on the smaller donors and combating elitism. But what I love that you talk about now, I'm on your email list, I watch a lot of your Facebook lives, is the inclusion, the diversity, equity, and inclusion lens that you really want people to see philanthropy through or their fundraising through. So how can we best do that? What is your advice for a nonprofit leader that really wants to do that?
It's interesting because it even goes down to the language that we use. And look,
yes,
I've been fundraising for 21 years. This is a shift that I started making 5 to 10 years ago and started, but now I feel like we have an opportunity, a window to really make serious change. So when I started in fundraising, I was handed a chart and it said for $5,000 donors, we do this. And for $25 donors, we do this. Mm-hmm. Now I'm building behavior-based donor relations. So first-time donors, loyal donors, regardless of amount, it doesn't matter how much you give, because you said, well, if I give $10 to my friend's birthday fundraiser, mm-hmm. that $10 is probably more of a sacrifice for you financially mm-hmm. than giving $10 million is for some of our billionaires. And we know that people of high net worth actually give less. So they give
in terms of a percentage, exactly.
3% of their worth away. And people beneath the poverty line in the United States, that's beneath $19,900, give 3.7% of their worth away. The poorer you are in America, the more generous you are. So if I'm a nonprofit director, how do I change this? I first start by, and I know this might be a little controversial in our industry, but everybody keeps saying they want a culture of philanthropy. I want a culture of generosity. I replace the word philanthropy with generosity every time I speak, because when I was a little kid, my mom never said to me, honey, we want to raise you so you become a philanthropist. She never was like, core value, you know, share your toys and give money to, she didn't say that. She said, honey, I want you to be generous. And generosity could be sharing my toys, helping someone with the last piece of pizza, which I'm not that generous.
No, I'm not.
You know, but generosity of my time and my resources. But nobody ever said, when I want to grow up, I want to be a philanthropist. So I think even the words, what's relatable to people who aren't involved in the philanthropic community? Can everybody be a philanthropist? Probably not. And the community, and our industry doesn't see people as philanthropists, but everybody can be generous. Everybody can give something they have. And I think that's one of the big changes, is bringing that and then an attitude of gratitude to the organization, that we are grateful for every gift. So we need to stop calling donors low-level donors. Mm-hmm. We need to stop using the word major gifts, like as if there's a minor giving department sitting around, you know, going, I hope somebody gives me a small amount of money.
A minor gift department. You know, right? Like,
even our terminology is elitist. And it sounds like I keep watching The Crown going, God, this is like the fundraising, you know, dear, she hasn't given enough. Oh, you know, and so we need to look at people and value them for far more than their monetary, just one amount at one date at one time. Because isn't it always true? And I love these stories, but they also break my heart. Woman dies at age 97, leaves $3 million to her local library.
Yeah.
Lived.
No one ever thanked her or talked to her. Butter
and jelly sandwiches, but every year had given them $25 a year for 60 years and nobody mm-hmm. noticed. Mm-hmm. And oh, her money came out of nowhere. No, if you had paid attention to her or him or a couple, you would know where the money came from, because they'd been giving to you for 60 years. Why don't you know their name?
Yes.
But you know Randy, who owns the car dealership, because he gives you $25,000 a year, which is less than one of his, you know, Mercedes even goes for used. So let's talk about worth.
Exactly. Those stories, when I read them, I do always think what a missed opportunity it was not to reach out to this person. I think of a client of mine, and I've told this story before, I don't think on the podcast yet, but a local organization that works in substance misuse and substance misuse treatment. And they received a donation every Friday, every other Friday, you know, $20 a man would walk in to the office, like pre-COVID when they were open, and give them a $20 bill. And no one thought to ask this particular gentleman what his story was or what was going on here. And I said, when I started working with them, I said, I think you need to talk to him because it sounds like he's, first of all, reaching out to you to probably, you know, ask him.
Some companionship.
Yeah. So it turned out that his son had died of an overdose, and he would send his son $20 every week. And that was just his way of paying it back. I mean, I've told this story so many times and I still tear up every time I hear it. It's so powerful. I know. So I think those stories are out there, but we're so focused on, like you said, the major gifts, the hierarchy, the giving societies, the people that are at the top end of the spectrum. And we are not paying attention to the richness, the generosity, and the incredible stories that are around us, even with these $20 donors, $40 donors.
And that was helping that gentleman grieve, basically.
Yes, yes.
And we missed the opportunity to help a person even further with their journey of grief, right? And if we say we're committed to our cause, like I do a lot of work in higher education, educating people about generosity is another thing we can do, right? Like it's part of who I am. And, you know, giving gratitude is part of our work. And it's probably, you know, the enlightened nonprofits are getting that, and they're spending time and resources in donor relations. And so I think there are things that have changed in COVID, going to the basics. And I think that unfortunately there will be a rush back to some bad behaviors that I worry about. Like, when are we going to schedule our gala? Nobody missed your gala, but you.
Nobody actually missed it. Did anyone miss it? No.
Nobody needs another Chili's gift card. Like, no offense to Chili's, but, or whatever is in your town. But I've never gone around my house and been like, you know what I'm missing in my life? A gift card I got at a silent auction for a nonprofit.
Right.
You know, like, and on my worst of days during COVID, and, you know, let's be clear, COVID is still going on. The pandemic is not over. Mm-hmm. Some of us are fortunate enough to have been vaccinated, and our family members have. But on my worst days, what I would do when I would get down in the dumps is I would go to World Central Kitchen, my charity of choice during COVID, and I would make a $100 donation, and I would get a video from Jose Andres, and, you know, I would get great stewardship telling me what they were doing with my money. And, you know, they were doing everything from feeding protesters during Black Lives Matter movements to voters to, you know, providing food for people who are hungry. They kept the restaurant industry alive in Austin and other places by hiring restaurants to make food for people who had food insecurity, because when my chips were down, I didn't think about, or when I was having a bad day, I didn't think about what I could do to enrich myself. I thought about, what can I do? Because I'm woe is me-ing because I'm not on a plane, or I'm not at a conference with Julia, or, you know, having a beer with my dad or something. But I thought, and there are people who are hungry. Mm-hmm. I am not hungry. So I need to get my poop together, make a sacrifice. So making a sacrificial gift, and understand. So what are we going to do in the nonprofit industry that says I'm not returning back to that behavior? Mm-hmm. There is no return to normal, I hope.
Exactly.
I'm encouraging people not to return to exactly everything they did.
Hey there. I'm interrupting this episode to share an absolutely free training that I created that's getting nonprofits of all sizes big results. Sure, you've been spending hours on social media, but what can you actually show for it? With all this posting and Instagramming and TikToking, does it really translate into action? In my free training, I'll show you exactly how to take people from passive fans to passionate supporters, and I'll give you specific steps to create social media content that actually converts. Head on over to nonprofitsthatconvert.com. Again, that's nonprofitsthatconvert.com, and start building a thriving social media community for your nonprofit right now. Without a big team, lots of tech overwhelm, or getting stuck on the question, what do I do next? Let me show you how it's done. I can't wait to see what you create. what you said is so powerful because it is similar to the man that was giving the $20. It's a sense of agency and it's a sense of feeling less helpless about your situation. Mm-hmm. So I did want to talk to you. Giving was actually up in 2020. Yeah. And I definitely want to ask you about your perspective and why you think that is and what sure. we can do moving forward. But for me, I think it was because, just like you said, a lot of us felt really powerless to stop. I mean, it's a virus. Yeah. It's not like an election. Yeah. It's like we don't feel as powerful. We don't feel empowered to stop a virus. You can't stop a virus. So
for those of us that are control freaks.
Oh, yes.
Hi.
Hi. I'd like to raise my hand as well.
My therapist tells me all the time, you realize you can't control that. I'm like, but I can try. And he goes, and you'll be frustrated. And I'm like, oh, so as a control freak who wants to control everything,
yes.
I can control my generosity.
Yes. And
while the world was spiraling around me, for me, it wasn't just COVID. It was not being able to see my family. It was George Floyd being murdered.
Which is today is the 1 year anniversary, actually.
Today is the 1 year anniversary of his murder.
When we're recording this.
I know. Sorry.
That's okay. I mean, it needs to be said. And by the way, I haven't heard a peep from nonprofits, but we can talk about that.
Right. I haven't either. Sherilyn Eiffel I just heard from her and Southern Poverty Law Center. So I just heard from them. So
okay.
Other nonprofits I haven't heard much from, but there was so much going on, political strife. I mean, you know, and so when the world was spiraling, I feel like nonprofits provided people hope. Yes. And so one of the things I can do during a crisis that I can't control is to give. I think it likens to disaster fundraising after a hurricane.
Yes.
Fire. I can help us rebuild. I think the healthcare fundraising was, I can provide PPE. Almost, I would say 99% of my clients were up in fundraising in higher education because the pandemic laid bare an inequity that we were not prepared for in higher education, to be honest. And that is, I don't think people understood that students did not have access to the internet, that they were in parking lots using their phones, you know, not stealing, but borrowing the Wi-Fi from the library. And administrators had no idea. They just assumed that if you got into college and your financial aid somewhere paid for it, not knowing that your home may not have broadband internet, or we have not provided laptops, or, you know, and it's a requirement. You can't turn in your paper. Mm-hmm. You have to turn it in online. You can't go turn it into a bin. So I think that laid bare. And so people gave to that. And then I'd love to tell a little bit of the story of my parents giving this year.
I love that.
And how it changed. So my parents, they're generous people. They raised us to be generous, not philanthropists, but
yep.
And my parents give to, I would say, four or five probably organizations a year. And I was talking with them at the end of 2020. And I said, hey, mom and dad, like, what was your giving like this year? Because of course, the conversation started around taxes. And my dad goes, well, you know, we don't give because of taxes. And I'm like, I know, dad. And he goes, but we changed our giving. And he goes, some of the organizations are probably going to be mad at your mother and I. And I'm like, well, I don't think they get mad, mom. You know, and dad goes, well, we changed our giving this year. And we only gave to two organizations at the end of the year. And I said, okay, what did you give to? And he said, we gave to the North Georgia Food Bank because they live in North Georgia and they realize how fortunate they are to have food and not be food insecure. They're in their 80s. They're on a fixed income, but they are very fortunate to be able to buy at the grocery store whatever they want. And then they gave to PBS. And I said, and they've supported PBS before. It's not like it was new, but they eliminated all their other giving and they gave two big gifts at the end of the year. And I said, why PBS? And my mom said, well, that was my gift. Your father was, you know, they make their giving decisions together. And we can talk a little bit about women's influence in giving, but she said, the PBS was my gift. And I said, why? And she goes, I can't imagine those mamas and daddies who had kids at home. And he thought they could turn on Sesame Street or whatever was on PBS.
Daniel Tiger. I'm very familiar with PBS.
And at least have some free entertainment for their kids on days when homeschooling was too much and they couldn't do another thing. She goes, I thought if I was a mom home with you kids, there was two of us in our household, and I had to school you and quarantine with you, and you know, we were all in the house and your father would have been upstairs working on the internet, you know, mm-hmm. and she goes, I would have wanted a day where I just plopped you in front of the TV,
yes.
turned on PBS, and like had a moment and a bath by myself. So she
yes,
goes,
to your so, mom.
Yeah. So she goes, so I gave to PBS so that they would stay. And I'm like, I never would have thought of that. And she goes, your dad thought about the tummies, and I thought about what am I going to do trapped in a house with two little kids? And I said, I know all my friends who are mamas, I could barely take care of myself, and I'm a 43-year-old adult. And some days I never left pajamas and didn't or eat proper food. How did mamas and dadas do that? You know, or aunties not or well, parents?
Yeah. Well, and sort of not well. It very right. much depends. So I that's love how
my that. Mom thought about their gift. Dad went for hunger, and mom said, you know what? It's okay. Their kids are not going to end up damaged because you put them in front of Sesame Street for 3 hours.
They're not. That reflects exactly how giving happens in our house as well. Yeah. So my husband was reading and looking, you know, looking at the data that said food banks are going to be the hardest hit. And just he's very analytical and very much logic based.
Yep.
So it's like, oh, food banks are going to have the greatest hit. Well, I'm not going to give to St. Jude's this year. You know, yep. I'm going to give to the food bank. For me, everything is very emotional and driven by, you know, I'm very into, obviously, I support Planned Parenthood. I support women's issues. I'm very into just things that I'm very passionate about. And I'm a monthly donor because that's just what I like to do. That's how I do it. But it's so interesting that you said that. I love that. So I think you're right. Like that, first of all, PBS, if you're listening, you need to talk to Lynn's mom because that is such a great story from a donor, like getting that story about that perspective that a lot of people probably didn't think about.
Well, she didn't have grandkids. She thought about herself. What would she have done being a mama in the pandemic? Like, and she, I, the other thing I thought about that just tugged at my heartstrings was giving the grace to moms to say, it's okay to plop your kid in front of a Netflix or in front of PBS, mm-hmm. right? And take a day. Like, you're not super parent. You can't do this. And my dad's like, well, you can't do that if the kid's hungry. You know,
he's exactly.
He's an engineer. So he's very practical. And I think for them, both of them are children of the Depression. And so my dad has actually been hungry in his life. And mm-hmm. so whenever he tells me all the time, you don't know what it's like until you've actually been hungry. You are such a privileged child that you've never, I'm like, I've been hungry. And he's like, no, you've never been hungry.
Right.
He's like, you've been hungry for certain things, or you were mad that your dinner wasn't served on time. He goes, but you've never been hungry, and you've never had to make decisions about where to put the money. Do you put it into food? Do you pay the power bill? Do you
pay the gas? Yep.
Right. Exactly. And so that was a lesson. And so they gave this the same, if not more, this year than they did in the past, but they focused their giving even narrower than they had before. And I thought that was a lesson for us. But if your nonprofit didn't see a surge in giving, I want you to ask yourself why, and don't blame the donor. Yes. Don't blame the donor, because the donors were out there giving. Mm-hmm. It may just have been that in donors' eyes this year, your programming or your service wasn't as much of a need. It was more a want.
I love that. Talk more about that.
Well, when the chips are down, right? Like, all of us have had times where we've lived paycheck to paycheck. If you work in nonprofit, you're not wealthy, right? And I remember sitting in my New York City apartment once going, oh God, I got the cable bill and the power bill, you know? And then I realized, well, you don't have cable if you don't have power, but that's a whole nother issue
right.
in logic in my life. But we've all had to make tough choices. And growing up, my parents taught me, we will provide you all of your needs, and your wants will be based on your performance at your job, which is school. Yes. So if you make good grades, you will have nice things and you won't want for much, right?
Ooh,
if you
that's kind of how we do it here.
Right. Mm-hmm. If you make poor grades, my dad goes, there's a tent in the backyard. I set up really easily.
Yes.
And I experienced that. Like I slammed my door once at the ripe old age of 11. I thought I was... And then the next day I didn't have a door because
He took it off the hinges. Yes. My dad did that too.
That is
so funny.
And I remember him saying to me, the government says I have to provide, you know, clothing, food, and shelter. and he says, never in there does it say it has to provide a door. And I
doesn't.
11 pushed my luck, pressure luck, Lynn, and said, can I see the paperwork? And
that's amazing.
That just extended my grounding a little further. So yeah. So needs and wants. So maybe donors didn't see your organization as a need. So for me, like I leaned in heavily to racial and social justice. I leaned in heavily to healthcare, to food. And I leaned away from some of my want charities. You know, like you said, anybody that had a big endowment that I knew could make it through, I was like, look, you're not a need right now. You're a want.
Yes.
You know, and so I wonder what that looks like for some organizations.
What I think is so interesting though, and what I love that you said about your mother giving to PBS is that I know there are a lot of people listening, and I'm sure you have a lot of clients that say, well, I'm an arts organization. I'm higher ed. I'm this, I'm not a need. I'm not forward facing. I'm not a COVID response charity. The story, the anecdote of your mother giving to PBS just proves that you can be a need to your donors.
You have to make yourself relevant though.
Right.
I would challenge back to those organizations, like perhaps a fine art museum at the University of Florida. They made themselves relevant and a cause. So they took photos of portraits and paintings, and then they had activities where your kid could make that out of vegetables or fruit or things laying around the house.
Amazing.
And they involved and engaged their audience rather than just saying, well, we're closed, we have no programming for you, woe is us, we can't have the opera or the ballet. What are you doing to make yourself a need, not just sitting on your pedestal going, well, it's not fair because no one has come to us. Do you know what I mean? So
you choose yourself. No one's going to choose you.
And then I would also say younger donors and more inclusive donors give to causes. They don't give to institutions. So what are you doing to break down your walls and not be so institutional and be cause-based? So that's higher ed's problem, is they expect you to give back to your alma mater. Well, what is my alma mater doing in my community? Are you profiling alumni who are social workers or run a community garden, or are you only profiling your alumni who are successful, quote unquote, mommy successful, where they make a lot of money? Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
So
yep.
I guess my question is how do you make yourself a cause? Because for me, when I saw people being jailed for peaceful protesting, I went and paid their bail.
Yep.
Because I physically can't protest. I wanted to protest, but for me, I had some factors, I couldn't physically protest. And
so
I will bail you out when you get arrested for peacefully protesting, though.
Yes.
So I can provide bail money for you. That is a need, because I know that if you stay in jail, they will draw out the process and you won't get your due process in time, right? And you did nothing wrong. You were a peaceful protester. So do you know what I mean? Those are the
things that
I think about. Those are needs. And so if I have to decide between the next performance of Les Miserables and bailing out a peaceful protester, then unfortunately, guess what?
Right. And the culture that we're living in right now. So we could talk for ages. Mm-hmm. And actually, I really think we should do another session on how to make your nonprofit a cause. But I think that's definitely something I'm working on with my clients, how to become not an attraction and not an organization, but an actual cause. Because a cause lives beyond you, you know, lives beyond your walls. And that's when you really build a community. Exactly. So what should we be thinking about as we end 2021?
Yeah, I think we should be absolutely obsessed with showing donors the difference that they made.
Yes.
And obsessed with giving them the gratitude that they deserve, especially if you had donors who gave to your organization for the first time ever during the pandemic, oh my goodness, think about those people that stepped up for your organization and said, you know what? I've never given to Boys and Girls Club before. I've never given to your organization before, but I'm going to step up. And so what are we doing to make sure they understand that that was the right decision? So I think that's essential. And then I think the second thing that's essential is absolutely every day in every way, having conversations about what we can do in terms of furthering diversity, equity, and inclusion
yes.
in our profession, and what messages we send when we do our general work and what that means. So, you know, if you're doing things the same way you did pre-George Floyd, pre-Black Lives Matter, pre-anything, I need you to question your existence. I need you to, you know, simple things like, why are you still addressing people on an envelope, Mr. and Mrs. Mark Campbell?
Right.
And why am I Mrs. Idris Elba? I mean, that is my dream, but also my reality.
Yes.
You don't need to assign me a gender. You don't need to assign me property as his.
Yep.
My name is Lynn Wester. I don't need a Mrs. anything on my envelope. So, and Lynn Swan is a dude. So don't gender me, because you're going to get it wrong and then you're going to make me mad. So how are we furthering inclusivity by decisions large and small?
Wow. I love that. Thank you so much for being here. Where can people find you? Everyone's going to want to get in touch with you.
Oh, I'd love to be found. So on social media, it's at Donor Guru. Very simple. You can find me on LinkedIn. And then our website is donorrelationsguru.com. We have so many resources, so many free things for you to come and join our community. We have a community of lifelong learners. And, you know, I don't know everything about fundraising and generosity, but I can probably hook you up with somebody who knows what you're trying to get information on. And so seek us out. We're here to help. And I'm just so excited for those of you listening to this podcast that you've found Julia, who's I think Aww. Is a gem. And I just want to say good on you for listening to a podcast about fundraising and really improving the world for you, your organization, and the people that benefit from your organization.
Thank you so much. And everyone, make sure you check out Donor Relations Guru. Follow Lynn everywhere that she is. And if you're lucky enough to see her speak in person, you're in for a treat. Well, hey there. I wanted to say thank you for tuning into my show and for listening all the way to the end. If you really enjoyed today's conversation, make sure to subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast app, and you'll get new episodes downloaded as soon as they come out. I would love if you left me a rating or a review, because this tells other people that my podcast is worth listening to. And then me and my guests can reach even more earbuds and create even more impact. So that's pretty much it. I'll be back soon with a brand new episode. But until then, you can find me on Instagram at JuliaCampbell77. Keep changing the world, you nonprofit unicorn.